All right, so before getting started, I'd just like to thank Rohit for organizing this session and giving me the opportunity to present here today on this topic. I have no relationships to disclose. So the discovery of HPV as a necessary cause of cervical cancer has enormous implications for public health, and it's already led to the establishment of two highly effective vaccines. So both these vaccines protect against HPV type 16 and 18, which are the two main oncogenic HPV types. However, considering that there's at least 12 other types that are considered grade 1 or 2A carcinogens by the International Agency for Research on Cancer, it's at least conceivable that type replacement may occur post-vaccination. So before going any further, it's important to define what we mean here by type replacement. So here I've defined it as the potential for the distribution of HPV types to change gradually as a reflection of the progressive elimination of HPV types 16 and 18 in vaccinated populations. Now, type replacement on its own doesn't pose any major public health implications. It only poses a problem if it results in risk replacement. And so if this increase in other non-vaccine genotypes ultimately leads to disease in these vaccinated populations. And so here I've listed two criteria that are necessary in order for type replacement to occur. And the first is that vaccines should not provide full cross-protection. And so if it's observed that these vaccines provide full cross-protection against all other oncogenic types, then we don't have to worry about type replacement. But also, two different HPV types should compete with one another during natural infection. So this figure here displays the evolutionary relatedness of the different HPV types. And so here I've circled species 7 and species 9. And so these two species contain HPV 18 and 16 respectively. And so theoretically, if type replacement were to occur, we hypothesize that it would most likely occur by a type from the same species, since these types often infect the same niche space within the cervix, and they're found in similar locations. And so in this figure here, I present the hypothetical changes of HPV types following vaccination. And so as we expect following vaccination, we expect that there to be a decrease in HPV 16. However, for other types, so here I've used the example of HPV 31, prevalence of this type and associated incidence of cervical precancer may either stay the same, decrease as a result of cross-protection, or increase as a result of type replacement. So this concept of type replacement isn't anything new. And so in August of 2007, there was an article published in the popular Canadian magazine, Maclean's Magazine, where they interviewed Dr. Lorikowski from the University of Washington, and they posed the question that in the absence of HPV type, or in the absence of these two types, 16 and 18, what's to stop other resistant strains from evolving into something more aggressive? And so although Dr. Kowski mentioned here that it's unlikely that other types will evolve given the fact that the genome does not evolve at a rapid pace, her final statement was a conservative one by a scientist, where she indicated that it's true, we don't know what will happen. And unfortunately, this became the ringing tone of the article here. So one historical example of type replacement is the case of childhood pneumococcal vaccine against pneumonia. And so this is an example that policymakers often use when arguing against HPV vaccination programs. And so in this example, there was an observed increase in carriers of other vaccine types, non-vaccine serotypes, whereas there was a decrease in the vaccine types. However, unlike the situation with the pneumonia vaccine, this virus evolves much quicker in comparison to HPV. And so the mutation rate for HPV has been estimated as one base pair or nucleotide position every 10,000 years, which suggests that it will take a very, very long time for type replacement to occur via evolution. However, there's also epidemiologic evidence to suggest that type replacement won't occur. And so there's already clear evidence for some cross-protection against HPV types from species 9, which contains HPV 16, as well as species 7, which is HPV 18. And also natural infection studies, which have studied HPV co-infection, have for the most part observed a higher frequency of co-infection than expected. And so for our study, our objective is to address the potential for type replacement using data available from five different studies conducted both in Canada and Brazil. Now, for the sake of time, I won't go into detail about these studies, I'll just highlight that there was a Ludwig-McGill cohort study, which contained 2,462 people and had multiple follow-up visits. The McGill-Concordia cohort study, which recruited 636 people and had follow-up visits for a couple of years. The Hitch cohort study, which recruited 1,038 individuals. The BCCR case control study, which included 1,687 individuals. And the CCAST clinical trial, which included 10,154 individuals. And in all these studies, I should also point out that HPV DNA testing was done using consensus primer PCR assay and not type-specific assays. So for our first approach, we compare the observed versus the expected number of co-infections involving vaccine types with other HPV types. And for example here, if one assumes that HPV type X competes with HPV 16, then we'd expect that this type X, which could be any candidate type, so any type other than 16 and 18, then it would normally be observed less often than expected by chance. And so the ratio of observed over expected would be less than 1. And so here I just present a table where I present a hypothetical example of our analysis of HPV type co-occurrence. And so on the left-hand side, we observe that type X co-occurs with HPV 16 less often than expected. And so here we observe 20 co-infections between 16 and some type X, whereas the actual expected value is 35, calculated by multiplying the marginals here and dividing by the total 10,000. And so since this odds ratio is below 1 and the confidence intervals exclude the null, then our interpretation here would be that this type should be remain under suspicion for replacement. Now meanwhile, on the other side here, this is the example of what would occur when co-infection occurs more often than expected. And so here co-infection was observed to be 40. The expected number remained the same, and the OE ratio was above 1, and so our interpretation would be that this type is not suspected for replacement. So in the first table here, I'm going to present some data from the Ludwig-McGill study, baseline and period prevalence information. I don't expect you to make out any of this, really. I just want to, I'll summarize it later, but here I've just highlighted the types that are from the same species of 16 and 18. So these were the types that we originally hypothesized would compete with these types. And so here, most of the ARDS ratio, or most of the OE ratios are above 1, and none that are below 1 are statistically significant. And when we restricted our analysis to women who were positive with at least one HPV type, then we observed that the OE ratios decreased overall. However, still none of the OE ratios in this study that were below 1 were statistically significant. So in summary, in our unrestricted analysis, the majority of OE ratios were above 1, and none of the pair combinations with an OE ratio below 1 were statistically significant. In our restricted analysis, that is, those women with at least one HPV infection, we observed more OE ratios below 1. For HPV 18, none of the pair combinations with an OE ratio below 1 were statistically significant. For HPV 16, only HPV 52 produced a statistically significant result. And so in the CCAST trial, we observed an OE ratio here less than 1, and the confidence interval excluded the null. And for the most part, with the exception of the Hitch study, most of the OE ratios were consistent. So other statistical approaches that we used to evaluate this problem was a cohort approach, where we evaluated the time to incident HPV infections according to HPV status with vaccine types, as well as clearance. And so the time to clearance of HPV infections according to HPV status with vaccine types. And also we used a regression approach where we constructed regression models for each HPV vaccine type as the dependent variable and included all other HPV types as the exposure. So in this figure here, on the left-hand side, I include data from the Ludwig-McGill cohort study, and on the right, data from the McGill-Concordia cohort study. And on the top, I show data for time to incidence of all HPV types that are included within the species 9, so the same species as HPV 16. And as you can see here, the hazard ratio was above 1, but not statistically significant. And on the bottom here, I showed time to clearance of HPV infection. And again, the hazard ratios here were above one, but not statistically significant. And this is a table from the Ludwig-McGill study where I just present the regression analysis. And here I've highlighted 52 since it was flagged in one of our previous approaches. And so in the unrestricted model, in both models actually, our odds ratios, which may be interpreted in the same way as our OE ratios, were both below one. But again, here they weren't statistically significant. And in our adjusted model, I should mention that we adjusted for all other types, as well as age and number of sexual partners lifetime. So in summary, for HPV types 16 and 18, the majority of hazard ratios were above 1 for both clearance and incidence, but there was no statistically significant results. For 16 with 52, the clearance data suggests that there may be some competition. And we had the problem of sparse data in this study. So for the individual types, because they're so rare in comparison to some of the more common types, it produced huge confidence limits. And for our regression approach, for HPV 16 and 18, many of the odds ratios were below 1, but not statistically significant. And as I highlighted earlier, the odds ratio was below 1 for 16 and 52 in the Ludwig. And overall, there was good agreement across the studies. So I didn't present data from all the studies just because it would take a lot longer than 15 minutes here. And another important issue related to type replacement is this issue of masking. And so I'll describe what I mean here. And so all these studies that we used, that I talked about here, we used consensus PCR assay, which amplify a wide spectrum of HPV types. But type-specific PCR assays are more sensitive since they amplify only single HPV types. So masking in the context of type replacement refers to the situation where there's competition not in nature, but for the primers between 16, 18, and some of these other types in these consensus PCR assays. And so if either 16 or 18 is present in a specific sample, then it's possible that these other prevalent types may go undetected, and this would be a measurement error, so not true type replacement, but a measurement error that needs to be dealt with. And so to evaluate this, we would estimate the amount of unmasking to be expected post-vaccination and in our study. And so if we, for example, retest all HPV-16 positive samples that were HPV-52 negative using a type-specific assay, and then we find X number of HPV-52 positives in this sample where it was originally negative, where 16 was present, then the estimated level of concealment for this type would be estimated by X, which is just this red region here, which represents the HPV-52 positive samples by type-specific PCR over the total. So types that were 52 was detected originally. And so for this study, the next step would be to reevaluate whether the HPV types that we flagged as being suspicious still persist as candidates for replacement. And so if the OE or the odds ratio is restored to above 1, then we would conclude that masking was the cause for this. So in conclusion, our analysis provides some reassurance that type replacement is not expected post-vaccination. However, the final answer regarding type replacement will likely come from long-term follow-up studies of vaccinated arms of the ongoing Phase 3 as well as the Phase 4 trials, as well as time point comparisons of HPV distribution in surveys before and after vaccination. And it's also important to quantify the amount of masking to determine how much type replacement should actually be attributed to these limitations of PCR. And I'd like to acknowledge collaborators, so my dissertation committee, of course my supervisor, Eduardo Franco from McGill, as well as Francois Coutelet from the University of Montreal, who does all the microbiology and the PCR testing, as well as Jay Kaufman from McGill, Stephen Walter from McMaster, as well as some other collaborators, and the coordinators, of course, for each of the individual studies, and all of the study participants, clinicians, staff, and, of course, funding organizations. So here at CIHR is the Canadian Institute of Health Research, as well as NIH. Thank you.